Welcome to Innovation Calling,
the podcast where we connect the creators for the next big thing. We're your hosts, Aaron Smith
and Sia Yasotornra.
Hey, before we officially jump into this episode, this is Aaron.
This is Sia.
And we have just a quick announcement along with an intro we wanted to do on this particular episode. So first of all, thank you all to those who have joined us in our Women in Tech Leadership series for our live podcasting events. We are on to our next event, which is officially scheduled for May 7th. We are welcoming Angela Ticknor, who is a regional VP at Salesforce, just a tiny company you may know. And once again, we're going to be really exploring her road to the top, things that she's had to overcome, how she got there, things she wished she would have known. And once again, we'll also have the opportunity for Q&A. So May 7th, same time, but I'm going to pass it off to Sia because we've got a really exciting announcement around where this is going to be.
Yes. So thanks so much, Aaron. I am excited to announce that we now have a home base for Innovation Calling and the Women in Tech Leadership Series, and that is at City Central North Dallas. We have entered into a partnership. We've opened up a studio in partnership with City Central Dallas. And Aaron, I got to tell you, the facility is amazing. It's going to accommodate a good sized crowd, over 100 at least. So by all means, we're very excited to get that kicked off. But on that note, we're here to talk about our recent tour within Silicon Valley and want to head up and introduce 99 Pledges. So 99 Pledges, Aaron, as you and I have talked about this before, since you have children and I've got tons of nieces and nephews, 99 Pledges basically is a creation of the pain points of fundraising. So Vinay Ann and Brad D., the co-founders, sat down with us to talk about how and why they've created this fundraising business to bring the whole concept of fundraising into the digital media and digital marketing world. They both hail from technology companies, including SonicWall and a little company called Facebook. So they've got some great insights from their corporate background, as well as them plunging into the world of startups in Silicon Valley. So without further ado, let's enjoy our chat with Vinay and Brad D.
All right, welcome to another episode of Innovation Calling. I'm Aaron Greger.
And I'm Sia Yasotornrat.
All right, Sia, you're introducing. You always get to introduce.
I am, but you know what, Vinay, Brad, welcome to the Innovation Calling podcast.
Thank you.
Thank you.
The reason why I wanted to talk to you guys is I knew you from the SonicWall days, and that was fairly recent history, 10 plus years ago. We've all moved on in life, as you know, we all should. And I noticed you guys started 99 Pledges, and it struck me as interesting because it's not necessarily in the tech world, but obviously there's a lot of technology behind where 99 Pledges is and what it does. So can you guys help me understand, what is 99 Pledges?
Sure. Basically, it's a crowdfunding platform that's kind of focused on helping schools and youth sports raise money online. So kind of as a use case, you know, you have all these schools around the country that typically do either selling products, or some of them in a growing number are doing things like walkathons or readathons and such. And to this day, the vast majority are still doing them using just cash and check donations, or tracking all those pledges on paper and such. So we wanted to modernize that. So we came up with a platform to help with that, to really streamline the process and then in turn help them raise a lot more money.
Where did it come from? Like you said, as I said before we started recording, as a parent, I hate fundraising. Yep. And when my kids come home with that thing, I'm like, oh, so what was happening that just sparked the idea where you're like, we got to have a better way to do this?
That's exactly where it came from. My kids were in elementary school, and they came home with a bike-a-thon fundraiser. They came home with these paper sheets that we had to try to go get donations. And me and Vinay were ding, ding, ding. There's got to be a better way to do this. So we did a test pilot with a school, another friend of mine. We were able to double what they did previously.
Wow.
So we knew we were onto something.
So a quick question then. So if I'm thinking about old school, and I don't have children, so I'm talking about many, many moons ago when I was doing fundraisers, or I'm watching my nieces and nephews, is there a drop-off rate of people who pledge and don't follow through on the paper that you're seeing? You're getting 100%, you know, actual pledging? I don't even know what the term is, but they actually do it?
Yeah, so it's interesting. We don't track that metric. We do see in all of our campaigns that allow per lap donations, for example, or per book or per hour reading. We also allow flat donations. And so most of the donations that come in through our site are actually 80% of them are all flat donations. So it's a relatively smaller portion that have the opportunity to pledge and then not follow through in our world.
Okay.
But whatever that drop-off might be, I think it's grossly overshadowed by how much more they get in donations using online donations, because now you can get grandma to donate from Florida much more easily than, you know, having her go hunt down an envelope, a check, stamp.
So is there, this is just fundraising in general. Mm-hmm. Is there like an integrity component to it where, okay, a kid says, I'm going to read, you know, 50 pages for a readathon. Is there accountability metrics in place, or you're just trusting the school?
Johnny only reads five.
Yeah.
Needs to be punished.
Is there something the schools manage that, and you guys just are just a mechanism to deliver the money and move it around?
Yeah,
I understand that.
Yep. So we don't measure that. That is on the school, and there are a couple of different use cases, right? Like, you have schools that have been doing this event for years anyway, so they've already got their own way of doing that. And there are all these nuances, right? Like, our system is generalized to the point where you can use it for a walkathon, a pledge drive, a bike-a-thon, pie-eat-a-thon, whatever you want it to do, you can do. So we didn't go down the path of building out specific use cases, because a lot of these schools handle things differently in terms of the type of event they use, the metrics they use, the prize programs, and those types of things.
Oh. And I also think that people are sharing their pages with their own personal network, so they're not going to typically lie. Like, a little Billy's not going to lie to his grandma that he, you know, just to get that donation. So
I have but three words to say to that: college cheating scandal.
Yeah.
Yeah, we don't have good to worry point, about good Billy. Point. It's the parents.
It's the parents, and that's what I'm wondering and worried about. Okay, so this is a nonprofit, right? So this sounds like to me like a labor of love. So I guess, why did you choose it to be nonprofit versus a profitable business?
So it actually is a profitable business.
Oh, is it?
Customers are all nonprofits. I shouldn't say all, but generally speaking, are schools and youth sports organizations. But
well, can you talk?
This
to
is a profitable labor of love.
There
you
go.
Can you talk to the business model, though? Because I'm interested in it. You sure. Give back. They get 90 to 100% mm-hmm. of what is donated. So, A, what determines the 90 to 100, like that 10%? And B, if you're giving back so much, how do you make money?
Sure. That's a fair question. And we get often, actually. So the way the pricing works is they keep 100% of their cash and check donations and 90% of the online donations.
Oh.
So our system also enables them to track all those cash and check donations. So they can enter them all in there. They can get receipts sent out to donors if they have their email addresses. Again, even for cash and check donations. And then on the online donations, they keep 90%, as well as we cover all the credit card fees and such. So that comes out of the remaining 10%, which further hampers our profit margin.
Yeah,
so exactly. So at the end of it, the way we do it is just simply through scale. We do thousands of these a year. And that's a growing number of that. So we just operate on lean margins as a result of that.
So I'm curious, you say you're focused on schools and school fundraising. I noticed, do you guys do churches?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we do. I would say, technically speaking, the platform works great for any group. It could work great for even individual fundraisers, right? So there's no reason that someone could use 99 Pledges in the same way that they're using GoFundMe today. But that's a pretty saturated market. And then additionally, it works great for any type of group. So it could be, you know, a group out of a company trying to raise money for, you know, whatever cause they might want to raise money for, or church or scouts. There are a bunch of those different use cases that occur on our system today. That hasn't been a focus of ours from a marketing perspective so much. But there's definitely nothing within the system that doesn't make it very well suited for those.
Got it. Well, coming from Dallas, Texas, you guys would make a killing on the church business. I'm just saying. I mean, yeah. So how are you guys doing your outreach then? So what is your marketing and what is your sales?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we do a variety of things. So a lot of it's online marketing. So that's a combination of email, online advertising, Google search engine marketing, as well as trade shows. We do them all over the country, reaching out to either parent volunteers or baseball coaches, for example. So a bunch of regional ones. So we might do I don't know, maybe 50 of them in a year.
So you say trade shows. What, I don't understand what that means because I'm in my head. I'm like, I'm still thinking tech, right?
Yeah.
So what kind of trade shows are there in
totally.
The
it's
fundraising
not like
world?
CES at all.
Yeah, exactly.
So, yeah. So basically, you know, I'll give you a couple of examples. One is it might be a school district. It might be as small as a school district. And we'll go there and they'll have these kind of vendor fairs where they'll have, you know, maybe 100 people show up. It might be as small as that. We have other ones that are bigger than that. We also do statewide conventions. For example, we've got one coming up in May here in California, which is the California Parent Teacher Association, so PTA. So they have those in most states. So we'll go there and then, you know.
I'm sorry to laugh because every time I hear the word PTA, I just naturally cringe.
Yeah.
And then the fact that you would go to a trade show where you're surrounded by PTA people, I feel like you guys are incredible people and thank you for your service.
So I have a question about your competitors because I know you can't be the only ones out there. So this is a two-part question. Who, like, what sets you apart from your competitors? Sure. I know you mentioned GoFundMe, but I'm talking people who specifically do these types of fundraisers. And the second part to that question is, you know, online is great, but what's your strategy going forward to really remain, you know, for a hashtag, to innovate, but to really change so it's just more than just online and continue to stay above competitors?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so I mean, competitively speaking, you know, it's maybe sadly, it's the state of the market where they're primarily, again, doing just cash and check donations.
But even still, because I've gotten a few, like, here's your link, but it's primarily, they're focusing on the check, but then they say, send out a link
if
you have it.
Exactly.
Okay.
And so, there are those. And the bulk of that is for, almost you can look at that like, a lot of them are PayPal, using PayPal, or even some are even using GoFundMe, actually. But the bulk of that is where they have one page for the school, right? So, like, either donate a cash and check to Timmy, or, hey, here's a link where you can donate to Jefferson Elementary School. And then so they go there, and there's essentially a repository where they can collect all those donations centrally.
Okay.
So what we do that's very different, a couple of different things. One is each kid has their own donation page. So we just import in a list of all the students from the school, and then in, you know, 30 seconds, there are 1,000 pages that are ready to go.
Wow.
Yep. And then we just hit a button, and then it emails all the parents with a link to their own kids' page. So the parent has zero setup. All they do is click on that link, come back to their page, donate, and then forward that on to grandma, aunts and uncles, and then kind of the donations just start coming in that way. So the cool thing there also is it's very personal. So when grandma gets that link, she knows she's donating to Timmy and not to Jefferson Elementary, right? So you keep that, maintain the same personal touch as if the kid went to grandma in person almost. And then it also keeps everything nice and tidy, right? So at the end of this, we can provide reports that say, this class raised this much, this class raised this much, these students got first, second, and third place, participation rates, all that stuff. Whereas if it just goes into one bucket, it's really hard to know.
Yeah.
So on that note then, do the children have the ability to edit their own page and make it more customized to themselves? Is it like, you know, the MySpace of fundraising?
Good question. So we actually used to have a lot of that customization. For a while, we took all of that out and donations shot up because the main thing is we didn't want to require logins, right? So each parent having to have a login and do configuration. So, you know, it's just a funnel, right? Like however many pages get set up, some subset of those get donations and so on and so on. So what we did is we said we want 100% of the pages set up. So we just set them up right away up front. Now, since then, over the last year, we've added back some of that customization capability. So parents can now go in and upload a picture of their kid if they want to, optionally. There's no login. There's kind of a secret link like you might have seen on some websites. So they just click on that link that they don't share and update a picture.
Well, I'm just thinking from a security perspective, I don't know if I'd be blasting my kid's face all over the place, right? Especially if it's not secure,
totally.
Right? And I think that's a critical component of it is if it was a login, I can see where customize it. It's Billy's page and all that good stuff. But interesting, though, that it's easier to get money when you don't have to log in. It makes sense.
Oh, 100%. The less you have to think about.
Well, the less I have to create
exactly
with my email. I mean, I have 2 spam email addresses now, like, because I forget. Like, that's actually interesting.
Yeah.
In the age of social media, you would think you would want to customize a page. So I'm wrapping my head around it.
It's interesting, right? And we see all of the above. We see people that do customize their pages a lot. We have some where they do it much less. On the privacy front, we work really hard to keep that secure. For our, you know, our background is out of security, as you know. For example, like these pages aren't kind of out there on the internet. They're not crawlable by search engines, Google and such.
Okay, that's the question I was going to ask.
Totally.
Okay.
And then so essentially the pages only get visibility as they're shared by friends and family, number one. Number two, it's pretty common, if not typical, and usually the case where we'll abbreviate the name. So it'll be COY, for example.
Okay.
So they're anonymized to a fair enough degree where a person's generally not too identifiable. I should have used your name as an example. That would have been better than CS.
Yeah.
Because there may not be so many COYs running around.
It's getting more popular, though.
I got to tell you, man, that chick with her amazing voice and talent is ruining my life. I found like I've met like three other. Do you want to hear a random bizarre story? Totally aside. I go into the store to pick up a birthday cake, and the guy looks at me and goes, "Oh, you're here to pick up a princess cake." And I'm like, "No, I'm picking up a 40-year-old man's birthday cake." But I just said, "Well, I'm picking up a male's birthday cake." And he's like, "Sia, right?" And I'm like, "How do you know my name, dude?" He goes back, brings out this princess cake with S-I-Y-A.
Wow.
I've never gone to that. It was a Tom Thumb, too. I'm like, I never go to this supermarket. I'm like, what the hell is going on here? I think I remember now I think about it. I actually have an old customer that she named her daughter my name, but it was before we met. So she didn't name it after me.
That's a little crazy. You can't take credit.
I know.
Love your name.
I know, right? Cute kid, though. So anyway, total aside, but yeah. Stop taking my name, people.
What about challenges? So what are, you know, when you're fundraising for people, are there things that the schools have told you we'd love, or are there things that you're still trying to, that make this a little bit harder than you thought originally? Mm-hmm. Any challenges you're facing as you expand?
I think our biggest challenge is having enough conversations. When we get into the discussion, you know, it's kind of a no-brainer. I know it sounds like I would believe that because I'm a part of this.
But you're dealing with old school stuff, like old school ways of thinking.
True.
I've dealt with ISDs, yeah.
Yeah, and it's pretty good. We're generally dealing with parents. So, you know, it's something that makes their life a whole lot easier. So it resonates from that standpoint. And then we've got enough demonstrated progress with all the history of fundraising that we've done. You know, thousands of these. We've raised tens of millions of dollars for schools. So we can pretty confidently go to them and say, hey, you know, you stand a good chance to double or triple how much you raise, right? And we'll shear away all this headache of having to chase down paper forms and cash and check donations. So it ends up being very compelling. So to the extent that we can have those conversations, we're very successful. It is challenging to have those conversations, though, right? Because you're not talking about schools, right? Initially, you know, naively, I thought we were going to work with schools. In which case, I thought, cool, we could get a school, and then we could kind of hierarchically go to the district, and then to the region and state, and kind of go that way. But you know, all these schools are making these decisions, you know, discreetly. So we have to hit them up.
Individually.
Well, and the sports side, are you dealing with? So, I mean, that's a whole nother.
It is.
And that's another funnel down even deeper, right?
No, thanks for bringing it up. And that is a different one. Totally different environment. You know, we're dealing, I'd say baseball is our biggest vertical within that space, but we do a ton in high school. Actually, high school sports and bands and choirs.
Yeah.
So all those groups within the high schools. And so that is very different because we're dealing with either coaches or band leaders. The nice thing about all of it, though it's not hierarchical, it's, you know, a lot of them tend to
network.
Know each other. Exactly. So we get a ton of our business from referrals.
So a couple things here. You guys definitely need to come to Texas because I'm telling you how huge sports are out
there.
And they're hardcore all about it, which is good. Because
Texas is our number two state.
Is it? Okay, good. Because they're all about, I mean, I don't understand how expensive choir is. I don't understand why it's suddenly so expensive. I blame Glee.
Well, I always say, like, with any of these sports bands, anything, by the time your kid is good enough to get a scholarship, you've probably paid for 10 years of school.
Good point.
Oh, I mean, like, it really,
just a reimbursement at that point.
Yeah, exactly. But go ahead, sorry.
So me thinking like a salesperson, my question then is so who is your contact person? Is it the principal? Is it the superintendent? Is it the IT person? Your site, does it have an API that plugs in potentially into the school's website? Like, help me understand that portion of it.
So our contact is the PTA volunteer.
Oh.
It's no one at the school, not an employee at the school, generally speaking. It's a little bit different for private schools, in which case we do tend to work more directly with the principals over there. But at public schools, which is the majority of our business now, it's the parent volunteers.
I have to deal with moms on a day. This is like my worst nightmare.
I mean, what you're describing to me is like hell on earth.
It's been great. You know, I think it's nice from our standpoint because we're coming to them with a solution. Yeah.
To help them.
Yeah, it kind of helps them. So it's a pretty positive experience, and it's nice to see them be happy after they use our system.
And the fact that they're not technically inclined, all you're offering is basically the easy button, in essence, right?
Yeah.
For fundraising.
Yep. Exactly right. Because if you think about what they're typically doing up until now, it's selling a bunch of junk. They don't want to sell stuff that's unhealthy. Yeah. They don't want their kids going door to door. They don't want to deal with cash and checks and, you know, I got to give this guy a candy bar and this person wrapping paper and this person cookie dough. You know, it's an industry, the product side of that industry is on the decline. Which is great for us from a business standpoint, but it's also great for parents and kids. You know, because they're going to be doing healthier stuff. They're going to keep a lot more of the money. Like, it's funny, when we go to these trade shows, you know, and it's all PTA volunteers or PTO volunteers, and other booths, they'll say, you know, keep 50% pretty prominently. Like that's a good thing because, you know, at the end of the day, someone's got to pay for the candy bar, the shipping.
The shipping, the logistics of it. Yeah,
exactly.
Overhead.
Exactly. So it's nice for us to be able to go to a show and say, you know, keep about 95% of how much you raise. And so that resonates, coupled with the fact that it just makes things easier. So the school gets a ton more money. It's kind of a win-win all around, unless you're selling candy bars.
I'm thinking again, just thinking the steps here. So you're talking to a PTA volunteer. How do you get the children's roster information, enrollment information? I mean, isn't that a SIPA thing? I mean, do you guys have to adhere to SIPA and all that good stuff. So help me understand the legal maneuverings on your business.
Sure. Yeah. What we do conforms to everything out there. The different districts and sports organizations have, you know, different policies independently of that. In general, it's not a problem because we don't do anything with that data, right? It's pretty much the data is only used to tell parents where to find their own kids' page. That's literally.
And there's no personal data whatsoever, right?
We ask for an abbreviated name and a couple email addresses. And we could do this fundraising without any of this. They could give us nothing, and we can just have a page where parents can go and set up their own pages. That's not as effective for the reasons that we talked about earlier, because you don't get 100% participation. But it's generally not a problem for us to get that data because, again, we do nothing with it. We don't give it to any other third party. We don't even use it to market 99 Pledges solutions to parents. Or donors.
Why not?
Mostly because we don't want to create a hurdle for getting the data. So it's more important for us to have a school have a successful fundraiser, maximize how much money they raise, and not bugging their parents, right? And then from there, we get the referrals.
Got it. So you're basically growing by word of mouth based on experiences of all the parents that are doing whatever in their own field and world to send you guys on your merry way. Wow. So, I mean, that saves you from... I mean, did you guys have you done analysis of how much you've grown based on network versus your outreach?
No, not for lack of trying. It gets a little tough to track source on a lot of these things, and especially because we've been pretty dynamic over the past few years on how we've been going to market, right? So we've had a year where we spent a ton on Facebook ads, and then we've had a year where we do, you know, almost exclusively trade shows. And there is also this other dynamic that makes it hard in that, you know, we could sell someone on this concept today, but they might not run their fundraiser for another year, right? Because that's when they do their walkathon. So a lot of this becomes a little bit challenging to track. We're getting better at it. We're getting more history. So we're starting to get a better sense now, but it's not, you know, I can't sit here and say 60% is from word of mouth and 30% is from trade shows and 10% is from ads, for example.
How are you guys not leveraging your big data? What is wrong with you guys, techie techs? I'm just kidding. So Brad, because you're talking so much.
Yeah, I'm a little shy.
I know. With your accounting background, I know you're a big finance guy, numbers wise and stuff like that. So I guess, could you help me understand as far as... you know, with your business model, are you guys seeing, with the way you set up your business, are you seeing more interest because of the way you set up with these potential clients of yours versus your competition? Are you seeing it, your business taking away from others, your competitors? Or are you similarly set up? I mean, I guess I'm trying to understand.
Well, I always think of our biggest competitor as the paper, you know, the paper pledge forms and whatnot. So we're definitely taking market share from paper.
Okay.
It's such a wide open green field right now. Yeah.
Okay, maybe I'm trying to figure out my question. Let me shape it a little bit better here then. Well, I guess I'm just trying to get Brad to talk. So.
Yeah.
So when you guys were organizing this business from the get-go, obviously, Brad, you had to do a lot of the number crunching and to justify the business and whatnot. So how long did it take you guys to become profitable then, if that's the case?
So there was not a, let me correct one notion there, too. We didn't do a lot of number crunching. We found one school that was down to try it, and we kind of went for it naively. Nice. We didn't do any market analysis. We didn't do any forecasting. We just kind of hacked together some sort of first version of a system.
I like
and
those stories.
It worked.
Yeah.
And then, so we're like, okay, well, that's one school. And there are tens of hundreds of thousands of schools out there. Let's go for it. And then we kind of just rebuilt a better system that's able to handle multiple fundraisers at one time and just kind of continue to grow from there. Profitability-wise, you know, we're pretty lean and mean, and we've been very lean and mean since day one. You know, initially it was just Brad and I for years, literally. You know, we outsourced our development. We outsourced our marketing for a while. We even outsourced sales for a while, up until maybe a couple years ago, at which point we started insourcing salespeople. But still, we're a very small team considering how much we do.
What is your team size right now?
It's Brad and I, and we've got three full-time sales people over here in this office, which
wow.
I'll show you.
And you're hiring, I think, or you just hired someone. So
We're trying to grow stuff.
Mm-hmm. So would you say then, Brad, because I see that Vinay saved you yet again. So being that you're working with these fundraising organizations or PTA and whatnot, is your business, would you say, is cyclical, or because there's different school districts and different programs?
Oh, for sure, yeah.
Is it still cyclical, even though you've got such a broad swath across the United States?
Yeah, we're basically fall and spring. So people come back to school, they're doing their fall fundraisers, and then coming off their winter break, doing their spring fundraisers, and then it's pretty, really slow in the summers and around the holidays.
We go chill at the beach during summer and go ski during the winter.
Yeah.
Well,
yeah.
Nice.
I've seen
it
your,
is kind of nice for
I've
a business
seen
perspective.
I've seen your Facebook family pictures and vacations. And yes, I was wondering what the heck you guys were doing with your business. So, okay, that makes absolute sense.
Yeah.
Do you think there's a potential of making it less cyclical, or is it just the nature of this industry?
Yes, we're trying to go for, you know, go deeper dive into sports. And there's a lot of travel sports teams over the summer. It's never going to be good as fall and spring. It's just massive amount of fundraising in those time periods.
But and
then we can even it out. Maybe even go to churches and Cub Scouts and things that fundraise all year round.
I'm just thinking.
Just kind of smooth out there, but it's always going to be those humps.
So you don't have those peaks and troughs, right?
Yeah, yep.
And probably more vacation time, I guess, when you guys are selling again.
Yeah.
More successfully in Texas. I think you guys should just make an investment in Texas.
You're right. We probably should further do it. But we probably do more events in Texas than any other state. We're probably there, I don't know, maybe 6 or 7 times a year.
Well, great. Thanks for never reaching out to me, guys.
that one stung a little, didn't it?
I wish it was me going.
Don't come in the summertime. It's hella hot out there. So, well, that's awesome. So I guess let's take a little step back on your backgrounds and, you know, where you come from. And so, you know, being that Brad, I was researching you guys because I knew, like I said, I know you guys from the Sonic Wall days. That was 12 plus years ago. And Vinay's online on LinkedIn, so I could look his career up, which we'll talk about. He's also a career entrepreneur. But Brad, you've disappeared.
Yeah.
I found a Swedish guy, or I shouldn't say Swedish. He is based in Sweden, working for a telco company out based in Sweden, and he clearly does not look like you. So what happened and where are you? Because I couldn't find you.
I've tried to remove myself from the internet. I was severely hacked via SIM hack. So one night, all of a sudden, my phone stopped working. And I started to freak out, and they had ported my SIM, and then got into two different email accounts, and then broke into some bank accounts and tried to clear us out. And then they started calling my family and harassing us and, you know, putting some fear into us. So but they caught one of the guys.
They did catch him.
Yeah, Santa Clara. There's a task force for the SIM hacking in Santa Clara. And so the hackers are really scaring my family. They're calling my brother in Seattle, giving our address, you know, making threatening kind of statements and whatnot. And come to find out, the person that they caught lived in San Jose, and he's a minor. So we were scared of this kid. But he's just part of the there's several different people that are.
So did you remove yourself from like all social, like you?
I tried. I've reduced, okay. Removed the vowels from my name on Facebook. And
is that how they found you?
So I think Facebook got hacked. I was notified I was hacked. So I think started there. They knew they could have tied my phone number to my two emails that were in Facebook. Then they hacked my SIM. So then they knew to go to hack my two emails.
So well coordinated.
Yeah. Crazy. Oh, and then it all was instantaneous. They took off my phone. They have this all dialed in. My phone shut off. They changed no numbers and all my validation emails and whatnot. It was crazy. I told the detective that I'm actually impressed with the minor, that, you know, I hope he learns from this and puts his talents to good use.
I hope he's a white hat, not black hat, right?
Yeah.
So with that experience, what are your thoughts? And this is totally switching. I'm switching off 99 pledges. I apologize. Not really. So in light of your horrible, horrible experience, and you are still on social media, because I do see you on Facebook. Yeah. We're older. We're not Snapchatting.
I'm addicted to those likes.
Yeah. You know, how does it feel to go on vacation and not get likes?
Yeah. Did it really happen?
My existence
exactly. I don't believe you.
My existence is not validated? What? Yeah. But okay, so in light of, I'm just curious, because you guys have, you know, we're all techie background folks, well, in light of emerging technologies like IoT, where everything's getting connected and obviously our social media accounts are all connected, where's your brain on that? Do you guys have an Alexa in your house or an Echo or whatever and all that?
I'm all about it. I think a lot of the benefits outweigh the negatives.
You had the worst experience. Yeah. So you're so cheerful about this. Yeah. I don't understand.
Well, now I feel happy they caught the guy. They sent like 10 agents to his house, and his parents didn't know, and they found my files because he downloaded my whole email, all my emails. So they found personal information on his computers and whatnot. So now we feel a little bit more secure. But there's just more safety precautions. You shouldn't have your phone number as your two-factor off.
So really?
Remove that from all your accounts. You shouldn't.
Oh, my God. I thought I was being safer that way.
Yeah, I know you should use like Google Auth. Authenticator or one of those.
Really?
Like, don't use your phone number, because the phone number is a point of weakness. That's, if they get your phone number, they got your.
Okay, now I'm annoyed. I thought I was being so much safer. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. There's a thing called YubiKey. So now I use it's a little, you can't see it on the podcast, but so if I log into my email, I need this to get into my email.
Oh.
So it's a physical.
U, letter U, letter B?
YUBI key.
Okay.
Yeah.
How'd you hear about that?
Just some security folks from Facebook. So, really great. So most accounts, Facebook uses it, Gmail, Coinbase, all that kind of stuff. So.
Now, do you think you were targeted, or just the kid got lucky, found you, and just decided, oh, I'm just going to screw with Brad? Or is there any relation or anything that possibly could have exposed
you? Did you pass him on the street one day and not say hello?
Yeah, I think it's, so that's another thing in Twitter, because I only use that to read.
Okay.
Yeah, so I was liking stuff in the crypto community. So I don't know if they targeted me because I had crypto or something.
Because
that's what they really went after is the Coinbase accounts and stuff.
Oh.
So I removed all likes on Twitter and tried to, you know.
I was wondering why.
Shouldn't be talking about happened, here now, but.
That happened like a few years ago, right? Because I remember seeing you were posting much more frequently, and then you kind of disappeared for a while.
Yeah.
And then I saw you with like your different name, and I'm like, what's going on here?
Yeah. But you can, so I feel comfortable now. I've tightened up my stuff. But it's surprising though. I thought it was tight, and they got in somewhere. Even some of the security experts they're freaked out because they got into some accounts that I had Google Auth. So I don't know if I saved there's seed codes that you can get to recover your Google Authenticator. So now they said just don't save those anywhere and just reset it up. So feel safe now. So that's why I'm still on it.
You're safer. So chipper. Well, you're a nice, happy, optimistic type of person. So if that happened to me, I'd be like,
Oh, it was scary.
Like the world, I will that would be they, punish
they,
the world.
They called my brother where I was at in Palo Alto with some friends at dinner. They called my brother, and my brother called me, and they said they gave my address, and we just had a new baby. So I literally was almost crying, rushed home because I was freaked out that they went to the house or something.
And yeah.
Then my dad's a cop, or my whole family's cops, and they he's like saying they should, you know, watch if someone's following me, taking the kids to school, and all this stuff. It was very scary. Now we have ugly cameras all over our house.
Wow.
You know.
I felt security. Like it's very, I'm going to date myself.
The physical threat was the scariest part in my family.
Well, yeah. You got a family, right? Yeah.
Because, I mean, this was almost 20 years ago. Somebody washed my checks. I, like, paid a... And it was so violating that... And it's, like, a tiny portion of a fraction. Like, not even a blip of what happened to you. I can't imagine. I felt so gross and violated about that. And just the pain in the ass on that. I just can't
imagine. Well, that's why I'd like to talk to the kid.
Yeah.
They're never going to let me because he's a minor. But I would love to tell him, like, you know, it's not just numbers on the screen. You're, like, threatening someone's safety, family. And I don't think he probably realized. You know, he probably got all hung up in the
screen. You don't know. Right?
But was he making money off of it, though?
Yeah, if they get a hold of someone's.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Yeah. So it's like. Dude, you're robbing me and you're harassing me. And what kind of soulless child are you? And what are your parents like letting you sit around doing stuff like that?
Well,
sorry. It's okay.
You know,
most kids probably come.
Yeah, they're in their room.
They're playing Fortnite.
Mm-hmm.
I bet you he has great parents because he's talented enough to do that. They just probably didn't know what's going on. The detective said they were.
Portion here,
we're going to blame his parents.
Yeah.
Well, but I think that is something where I think bringing it back to 99 pledges, right? Do you feel like this next generation, Gen Z or whatever, they're actually starting to get older now. They're starting to hit 19, 20, but take that one and absorb that. Yeah. This next generation of kids, they grew up with the internet already being, and social media, you know, 2.0 was already out by the time they come around. Do you guys sense that these kids are so much more technically savvy? Is it going to affect our culture?
Ooh, it's not deep.
I mean, probably, yeah. As it pertains to our business, though, I think it's all of that just works in our favor. There's just different ways that they can share and connect with other people and create awareness of these things. You know, and today, though, you know, I would, I don't know what the math is because there's nowhere for me to really know. But, you know, a lot of our donors are grandparents, right? And so, and they're already relatively tech savvy, the ones that use us. But there's probably a whole population of grandparents that don't want to go online or afraid to go online to donate. And so I think that'll change in our favor, right?
They'll age out.
Exactly. They'll age out and you'll have this new crop of people that are totally down to go online and would donate no other way.
It is interesting though, how much is accelerating because when we started, we had to really explain, okay, we create a profile and each kid gets a page and you know, now people get it.
They get like, okay. And,
you know, funny story to this morning, I was explaining to my kids that it used to cost more money to call long distance. And they're like, what's long distance? I'd explain. If you called another city and...
hit the one.
Yeah. Yeah.
If you hit the one, you're in trouble.
Yeah. Yeah.
Don't you be down to one anywhere.
Yeah.
No, it's interesting because even in the hotel this morning, they had phone charges listed on the phone. I'm like, really? Yeah. They're still charged? Like,
why is there even a phone in the room?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, and that was only 10 years ago because I remember my son was born and we were calling and it cost money.
Oh, that's well.
I'm calling my grandma or his grandma and stuff.
That's funny. That's great. Well, so I mean, I appreciate you guys your time on this. Is there any initiatives going on right now? Oh, actually, no. Before we even do that, in the next 5 to 10 years, where would you guys like to see 99 pledges, or where are you guys envisioning your growth of your business? As Brad suddenly looks away with a laughter.
Something interesting out there for Brad to look at.
Yeah.
You know, I think we don't do a lot of predicting to that degree. You know, I think our goal is just to continue to grow, and then you know, different opportunities will arise, and those could take a variety of different forms. But we're just kind of heads down trying to get the word out and get more and more schools and teams and so forth to use the system. You know, I think we're nowhere near the saturation point, right? Like we're doing a fair bit of business, but there's still, you know, the 90%+ of the pie that we haven't penetrated. that's ripe for using the system. And that's just in our two key verticals of schools and youth sports. And then there's 100% of all the other pies, you know, one of which you mentioned, churches and scouts and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, that we haven't touched. So, you know, I think there's a lot of opportunity ahead of us for us to go after those spaces.
Wow. So, I mean, yeah, I'm extraordinarily excited for you. I think that you guys have entered the right market. Fundraising and children will always exist. So good job tapping into that. Aaron, I think we're in the wrong business, man.
We are.
No, we're not. Technology. There's always going to be some technology to drive all that stuff.
Yeah, technology, too. As long as we can hashtag. We got some crypto. We're good.
Yeah, thanks for adding that crypto into that mix there and security for us.
Don't talk about it.
Exactly. So if we wanted to, or someone wanted to get a hold of 99 Pledgers, better understand, you know, who and where should they go?
99pledges.com. And you can chat with us there. You can call us. You can email us. Any method. We're open.
But you can't ping Brad online because he's hidden.
Yeah.
Just go to 99.
Yeah. Just go to 99pledges.com. Carrier pigeon. you know, there's going to be a day when that comes back into fashion. I just feel it. Excellent. So thank you very much, Aaron. Sure. Is there any other questions you have?
No, this has been awesome. Thank you, guys.
Cool.
All right.
Thank
you. Brad.
All right.
Thank you so much. And that wraps it up for another Innovation Calling podcast. Mm-hmm.